Hey, thanks for listening to The Hold Steady is for Women. We're really glad that you're here. Today we're tackling the controversial legacy of Teeth Dreams, the band's sixth studio album. Join us as we lock our bedroom doors and listen to their record track by track. We hope this whole thing doesn't frighten you.
I mean, yeah. Justice for Teeth Dreams, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we've long lobbied Justice for Teeth Dreams. I think so much of the reaction to it when it came out was just a bunch of white dudes talking about the production. I can't count the number of times I've been lectured to about production on this record by men in general, but I can tell you that my husband has done it twice. I think just being excited and not realizing what he was doing, but yeah. I mean, nobody gives a fuck about production, guys. They're still good songs.
Yeah. I found that one of my defining parts of being a woman who's a Hold Steady fan is defending Teeth Dreams as an album, and that a lot of that is self-imposed. So I've just like made it my thing to yell at men on the internet about Teeth Dreams. But I talk about this a lot. This album came out during a really, really difficult part of my life, and to have the Hold Steady put out a new record during that time, I developed some pretty intense emotional ties to it. But that being said, I think that like I'm pretty far removed from all of that stuff now, and it still stands the test of time. And I think it sounds better now, especially its place within a catalog that includes Open Door Policy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing about when this album came out was when Franz had left the band, Steve had joined the band. Mm-hmm. And I even remember being kind of like, who's that guy? You know, because Franz was and is such a huge part of the band. And I remember just being like, more guitars, really? More guitars. And of course, I'm super happy to have been proven wrong. Steve is wonderful. The band wouldn't be the same without him. And I think that Teeth Dreams just showed the influence of a new songwriter. And it wasn't what people were necessarily expecting. I myself was a little uncomfortable with it at the time because I was so happy that they were back. But I was also confused because it just wasn't what I was expecting. It was just kind of a weird time. Like I remember when they went out and they brought Dan Neustadt.
Yeah.
And they brought Dan Neustadt to do keys, but he was kind of stuck in the back. It was strange, I think.
And it was brief.
It was brief and it was strange. And it was definitely like they were finding their footing, but like this record, I would say I probably feel more about Heaven Is Whenever, or the way I feel about Heaven Is Whenever, I think is similar to how you, Kaylee, feel about this album. Mm. In that it was at a really rough time in my life. But I'm going to end this soliloquy by saying that every time the Ambassador shows up in a live set, it's like that song just like warms me up. I don't really know how else to explain it.
Why don't we start listening to Teeth Dreams? We're going to start off with the first track, which is I Hope This Whole Thing Didn't Frighten You. One of the things that always stuck out to me about this song is that we're back to the idea of a presumably male narrator is talking to a presumably female person in his life about, like, this is a side of my life that I'm not sure that you can handle or not sure that, you know, I want you to see. And I always had a lot of thoughts and feelings because I feel like I had been that woman before and being in situations where a dude is like, I don't know if this is a side.
Can you handle it?
Can you handle it? Yeah. Yeah. And we don't hear, you know, we don't have a second verse with the woman being like, your scene sucks, or yes, I am scared. You're right.
I remember being surprised that there was a refrain, because that doesn't always happen. Usually he comes up with like a bunch of different ways to say the same thing. And in this case, it just repeated, which is not bad. It was just different.
And I remember that song coming out for the first time, you know, after complete radio silence for however long. And I think it premiered on Rolling Stone or something. And I saw the tweet. I was working at the arena at the time, and my boss and I had a really good relationship. And I flipped out and just listened to it on repeat, like, all day. And by the time he came out to be like, you okay? Because, you know, like, listening to one song on repeat is usually an indication that things are not well.
So
by the time he came out to be like, you okay? I was like crying under my desk because I was just like so happy.
I think it's, as an album starter, as an album opener, it's pretty strong. The Hold Steady's so good at album openers and album closers. It's hard to even think about like an album that doesn't have a good bookend. But I feel like this sets the tone for what this record is going to be about, which is that it's not a happy album. Mm-hmm. The video, back when music videos were made, the music video for this used footage from the 10th anniversary show in 2014 at Music Hall of Williamsburg, which I was at, and it was my first Hold Steady show in like, what, 4 years probably, because I don't think they'd played any shows since like 2010 or 2011. And I met some people from the Unified Scene boards, as you did. And one of them ended up being my friend Matt, who, you know, we kept in touch and developed a friendship in real life. And it is through Matt that I met my soon-to-be husband. So, like a few of us, I would not have a spouse without the Hold Steady, is my conclusive statement for, I hope this whole thing didn't frighten you, ironically enough.
I hope this whole thing didn't frighten you, got us. Spouses.
Yeah.
Excuse me, where is my spouse? Just kidding. Just kidding.
I hope this whole thing didn't frighten you is what I said to Ian the first time I took him to a Hold Steady show when we were dating.
Wait, really?
2 years later. He was familiar enough with the lore because him and Matt were roommates in college.
Right.
So he had a pretty good foundation. The first show we went to, though, was Lifter Puller, or like first show we went to with me. He had seen them before, but the first show that he experienced me in my Hold Steady form was when Lifter Puller opened, which is just like, I was like, well, if you can handle this,
then you can handle this.
You can handle it. Yeah.
Think you can handle it?
That I might suggest is if you guys want to get angry, I have Genius open while we're listening to these songs, and
that's
just looking
idea.
At the annotations it's pretty funny to see, like, you know, what some people are arguing in the comments about, but also like, I'm glad that I'm not the only one who picked up on the, some of us don't even live here anymore, is a POS reference to We Don't Even Live Here.
Oh, that's so funny.
I didn't know that.
We hate that. Actually,
we don't love that. Craig has called this song a sister song to the Arctic Monkeys' A Certain Romance.
Damn, I didn't know that either.
Like, when and where? When?
Yeah, I guess it's annotated, but I didn't click on it. Speaking of songs I have a lot of feelings about, Spinners.
Should we dress up and dance around?
Oh my God. I have a lot of feelings about Spinners.
Me too.
Yeah. Heidi, do you want to start? and talk about some of your Spinners feelings before we listen?
I think Spinners felt like it was about me, like about 5 years before the song came out, because 2009-ish was a really, wow, that was a time. It was one of those songs, and there's a few of them that are just like, damn, like attacked, you know, like, you know, like, I'm just saying all the dumb things really at me next time, Craig, you know, but it's one of the songs that I relate to way more than I wish I did. But at the same time, I'm glad that it's there, because I always kind of think of this song and magazines in the same way. They're both kind of like, ooh, they are correct about that, but I'm mad that they're correct, but they are correct. Yeah, so I have feelings about this, but I think seeing it and hearing it when I did, when this felt like the past, was just an odd experience. It was just strange.
Yeah, that kind of like forced nostalgia there of being made to like look at something that you didn't know had even passed.
And I also always thought that he was talking about New York City, because I mean, I don't know. Some of this holds up for me. Never let them tie you up. It's a big city. There's a lot of love. Like, yeah, it's a big world, girl.
Can't understand it. Craig has said in a few different interviews, and it stuck with me, that he saw a girl waiting for the train one night at the same time as him, and she was all dressed up to go out. And she, you know, looked like she had just moved to the city, or that's at least the narrative that he was putting into the moment. And that is what inspired the writing of this song.
Waiting for the train all dressed up and like kind of drunk is a mood.
On that note, let's listen to
Spinners.
It's so hard for me to turn that off.
I know. Oh, man.
So Spinners, this album came out, I had been single for, except for a really brief relationship, but like truly single for the first time in 7 years, starting in like early 2013. And so this came out about a year into my singlehood. And it was, Heidi, like you were saying, it was one of those moments where cognitively, I know that Craig wasn't writing a song about my life, but when I heard this, I was like, Jesus Christ, is Craig writing a song about my life? It never felt sad to me, though. I kind of felt it as an empowering anthem. Like, a heartbreak hurts, but I can dance it off. I am in control of this narrative. And It pretty much defined, I think, the next couple years of my life, and many people may have a Spinners era in their life. And then I moved to a bigger city. I moved to Boston, and this very much felt like my first year living in Boston. But I feel like I carried this song with me living in China and walking around in really gigantic cities that I had no frame of reference for, like 12 New Yorks, and still felt like this is, you know, my Spinners song.
Yeah. My Spinners is kind of name. I had moved to Charlottesville, Virginia, where I knew nobody. I got a job there and I was like, yeah, okay, I'll move, like whatever. And I had been in a long-term relationship in college. He was still in college, but you know, we were going to stay together and then be together after he graduated and all that. So I moved and I grew up in a small farm town in Western Michigan and moved to Charlottesville, Virginia, which is not a big city, but like certainly in relation, any sort of state college town is a different vibe. So, and then ultimately when we broke up, I just have like vivid memories of sitting in, there was this bar near my house called Beer Run in Charlottesville. And I remember like sitting there drinking probably Bell's Oberon or like Two Hearted and just being like, heartbreak hurts, but you can dance it off. And just like sitting at the bar and like trying to reconcile the idea that there would be like a future and that prairie towns and farm towns are not the be all end all, and things that happen there might not mean anything, but it hurts right now, but you know, dance it off. I don't know.
Yeah.
This song allowed me to look at my very recent history with kind of with affection, which is not really how I had felt about it until I heard this song, because there was something really wonderful about that time in my life when I was super irresponsible and was just kind of partying and, you know.
Well, I think that's what the wonderful part is. It is the irresponsibility.
Yeah.
Obviously, some of the like most depressing times of my life were also the most fun because I was drinking until 4 or 5 a.m. I was partying in the bar after the bar closed. But that's not sustainable, nor do I think any of us really wanted it to be, but it's so easy to look back on that kind of stuff with like either negative feelings or rose-colored glasses. But this song, I feel like there's like a softness to it almost. You can look at those times in your life and have compassion for who you were then.
It really captures the feeling of possibility that you had at the beginning of the night, like before things... You know, before you like broke a heel or just before you ran out of money, but the beginning of the night.
Mm-hmm. I think that there are parts of this album that sound like 90s arena rock. Yeah. And that's really evident in Spinners. I guess all that anyone needs to know about me is that for like a solid 2-year period, my alarm clock was Spinners, which... So every morning I would like to...
Here we go. All right. Let's do this.
Thank you, Craig.
Good morning.
Good morning. Let's go teach for some reason. So the Spinners into The Only Thing is like a big Hold Steady 1-2 punch for me. I think in terms of emotional connections to Hold Steady songs, my obvious answer is First Night, but like the one I come back to more and more is The Only Thing. It, I think, does a lot of different things that we hadn't seen before from the band and that we didn't see again until Open Door Policy.
Yeah, I love this song. I remember hearing it and thinking like, oh, that's kind of weird. And then Only Thing into The Ambassador, which we'll get to later, but like that's also a classic transition. And the lyrics in The Only Thing, they fit so well with so much of the like quote unquote old pantheon, like, you know, Holly and all that, that you don't really see very much of on the rest of this record. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. The level to which I relate to The Only Thing is uncomfortable.
Yeah, me too. So on that note, let's get uncomfortable.
Let's get incredible.
Let's get...
Oh, my.
Incredible. Ambassador is such a quietly powerhouse of a song. I think you really think it's going to be just like a chill vibe. And then the lyrics hit you. And then that punch at the end.
It's a journey.
It is a journey. Year spent faking pain and making plans is also just a fantastic line. And very relatable.
Here's where I sound like a genius annotation. When they say faking pain, do you mean like faking pain to get like pain pills?
I think that's one way.
I never thought about it like that. I always thought about it as like other people thinking that you're faking. Like maybe this is coming from my point of view as a person who has, you know, genetic syndrome that gives me invisible pain. But yeah, people think you're faking all the time and that you're just doing it for attention, and you're absolutely not. It's interesting to think about it from that perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that also.
Yeah, and I think the idea of mental illness is also at play here.
Yeah.
Oh, there's piano on that song. And I remember watching it live and there was no piano. And being kind of upset.
It's been interesting to see how they've reworked the Teeth Dreams songs live to include Franz.
Yeah, because it's not that there weren't any keys parts in these songs. It's just obviously they didn't always recreate them live. And it just, that's part of why I love them so much right now, is because it just feels like all of the good stuff is all together.
Yeah, and it doesn't ever feel like they have to compete for for everybody to have space.
No, it's balanced.
And I'm sure that took some doing, right? It goes from being like two main songwriters to three main songwriters. I remember reading interviews with Steve where he just kind of was like, well, actually both of them, him and Franz, talking about how they kind of negotiated the space and how it took some doing. But I think all the arrangements that they, when they weren't on each other's original songs, I think it sounds amazing at this point.
This is, and I know that the bands have all said this, but this really is the best that they've sounded live in years. Let's get on with the business. And by that, I mean, let's listen a little bit to On With The Business. So I think Craig is on his DFW shit in here, which was very, not me in 2014, but yes, the men I was dating in 2014. If you are a woman who attracts the men that I do, you have dated enough men who love David Foster Wallace for a lifetime.
Oof. And I think that if you're a woman of a certain age who likes the Hold Steady, you too have dated enough men like that to last a lifetime.
This song is interesting. I liked it a lot when it first came out. And then I guess for me, it's like fallen a bit down my list of best songs from this album. I do really love the line about American Sadness.
I'm the opposite. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just agreeing that I also love American Sadness.
I didn't like this song when I first heard it. Like when I heard it live and stuff, I just thought it was kind of bro-y. I don't know. Just something about it I didn't like. And yeah, now I love
like
it.
I like the lyrics, but musically, I get what you mean. Like musically, it's a little more bro-y.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now I love it. Now it's, I would say it's my favorite on this album used to be Big Sig, which is confusing. And now I love this song.
Big Sig's underrated. Let's get on with the business.
Parking lot. I wanted this to be our year. but they cut out supplies and they sent over some guys. Those guys have made it perfectly clear. I know I made them a promise, but those are just words. Words can be weird. I think they made themselves perfectly clear. Blood on the carpet, mud on the mattress. Waking up with that American sadness. Dead receptors, body limitations. Weak handshakes and great expectations. Bountiful chemicals, beautiful kitchens. So many choices, decisions, decisions. I said a couple things that probably weren't technically true. They disconnected the phone last week. That's how we lost the connection.
Yeah, I feel like lyrically, I really like it. Listening to it now in succession like we have been, it pairs really nicely to I Hope This Whole Thing Didn't Frighten You, thematically and narratively. Heidi, why do you think this song's grown on you so much in the last recent time?
I think because it somehow, I mean, America's always been kind of bullshit garbage. This has always been kind of a false front. Like, America's always been kind of a false front, and I think that this song somehow, it's not like it predicted it, because we've always been like this, but I would say, especially in the past year or two, it's just become so obvious that, like, you know, the emperor has no clothes. Like, America's kind of bullshit.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, it's wild. Right before this, I was listening to You're Wrong About, and they were talking about how all the slasher movies that came out in, like, the 70s and 80s were actually about, like, economic insecurity. Like the family in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like, used to work at the slaughterhouse and now they don't know what to do because they closed the slaughterhouse. I kind of get that vibe from this song. It's like, we just don't know what to do. So we just slap America on it and say it's American. And that's what makes us feel better about doing some really bad shit.
And capitalism and consumerism will save us all.
It's just like, at some point, like, you're in this so deep that you have to kind of have swagger about it, or else you can't really get through the day.
That's the American sadness. I think that this is one of the first times that we see Craig explicitly referencing, which they do a lot on Open Door Policy, but explicitly referencing that, like, the depression that comes with living in our competitive and capitalistic society. And, you know, that I'm looking at the chorus here. Blood on the carpet, mud on the mattress, waking up with that American sadness, dead receptors, body limitations, weak handshakes and great expectations, bountiful chemicals, beautiful kitchens. That part always stuck out to me because I feel like it's talking about class in a really interesting way.
Mm-hmm. I know, in a way that probably a lot of people who go to the shows and sing along with the lyrics don't even, like, it doesn't even register.
I feel like we haven't scratched the surface on this a lot, but I think that the Hold Steady's fan base leans toward affluent, and that's an interesting tension, that the Hold Steady's frequently written off as, like, a party band, and that their shows are seen as, like, party time, and that their fan base is one that can afford to spend the money on shows and travel and $20 beers at the shows. And yeah.
A beer is $20?
Sometimes. Yeah, New York.
Brooklyn.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Probably.
There's a reason we always stop drinking when happy hour's done.
I would say that non-happy hour beer price at Brooklyn is, like, at Brooklyn Bowl is probably $11 for a beer.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That's fucking crazy. I'm sorry. This is an old conversation. I have this a lot, but I frequently feel like fucking Rip Van Winkle when it comes to alcohol. I'm just like somebody's like, yeah, blah, blah. You know, I went and got a PBR for $7. Someone paid $7 for a fucking Pabst. Are you kidding me?
I know.
You could pee in your mouth for free.
And that's our first ad spot.
I'm just going to say that's going to be a pull that one out and put it in the beginning.
Yeah, it's, and I'm not really a beer drinker because it hurts my stomach. So if I want, like, a glass of wine at a show, God forbid, even like a gin and tonic is going to cost me $12 for, like, well gin.
I was always about quantity over quality. So that's maybe why I didn't really know that.
Yeah.
That's wild to me. That's crazy.
That's the American sadness, is paying that much money
to fucking forget where you are.
An IPA. Yeah.
Okay, the IPA inflation is disgusting. I'm just going to say that. IPA is fucking gross.
Put great, now we've lost our whole audience, Heidi. Did you think that?
IPA is gross. Put it on my grave.
What is next? Big Sig.
Yeah.
This song.
Virginia Slims.
Yeah. Craig says about this song, 120 millimeter length cigarette might be more cost effective, but they always look ridiculous.
I would disagree, because have you seen Cruella
DeVille? Cruella DeVille.
Yeah, but she has a cigarette holder, which is a whole other thing.
Yeah.
Wow. Maybe Big Sig is about Cruella DeVille.
It's the biggest Sig.
Heidi, you mentioned that you loved this song. Desi, did you say you also loved the song when the album came out?
Yeah, I think it's funny in looking at the track list now, because, you know, now I don't listen to albums in sequential order so much anymore. But I think that Big Sig was kind of the, like, amp up to what was at the time my favorite song on the record, which was Runner's High. So I think that a lot of the, like, Big Sig and Wait a While affinity that I have is because I always was just like waiting for the, you know, it was like edging, like I was being edged into Runner's High.
This song reminded me, this song has like Big Navy Sheets energy. That's why I like it. Cause I am a huge, I can't remember who I argue with about Navy Sheets.
Me.
All the time.
It's disgusting. It is. That sounded like a- associate any of that.
I love Navy Sheets, but this song has, there's that Beatles song Hey Bulldog, which people consider a throwaway, or they considered it a throwaway, and it's fucking brilliant. Like, it's something they just recorded like in 2 seconds, and they were like, put it on Yellow Submarine, we have to put this record out, fuck this, we don't care. I like songs like that that just feel like they made it without really thinking, and then they're just accidentally brilliant because of who they are. Not to say that they didn't put any thought into this. It looks like they did. But I don't know. It just has like a dark horse energy that I like a lot.
Yeah.
It's very tongue-in-cheek. And there's like a funniness about it that I think is a levity, right? That's not found a lot more on this album. But these next three songs, The Big Sig, To Wait a While, To Runner's High, are like the most fun of the album on the surface. And then you get like destroyed with almost everything into Oaks. So that was always, I'm going to say that 6 through 8 were always my skip songs.
Ouch.
I know. Not like skip. I would never skip them if I'm listening to the album. But lyrically, this song feels like Magazine's Part 2. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to Big Sig.
Ever since she was 7, she always likes to pick one's best. You get more for your money. And I know that she's gorgeous, and I can't take her serious. She looks kind of ridiculous with her Malibu 120s.
So now she's a scientist.
I love this song because it has Craig, or whoever the narrator is, in a familiar place, which is like he's hanging out with this girl and like he knows that he's just like probably not her first choice or her fourth even. He's just like kind of happy to be there.
Yeah.
Like she doesn't really like me that much, but she's a lot of fun, so I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
I like that that dynamic showing up again and again.
Yep, like I'm just here for the show, man. Like this, you know.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
You know, any hold steady song with a she narrator, you know, pronoun repeated, I pay more attention to. I have a lot to say about Wait a While. I'm sure you guys do as well. Heidi, you were talking about before when you heard Spinners, then you were like, and Magazines, that you were like, damn it, this is about me. And the first time I heard Wait a While, I was like, I should be offended because this, like, on its surface, the song is pretty condescending, but I'm not mad. I'm disappointed in myself.
This also has, like, a little bit of You Can Make Them Like You in it. Like,
yeah,
it does.
Yo, there's lots of dudes out there and you're going to be fine. Like, basically, like, they're one in... It's weird, right? Like, because it's basically saying, like, men are a bunch of ding-dongs. You're great. So there's really no point in throwing yourself at or being, being upset if, like, one dude doesn't work out or trying to, like, tie yourself down really quick because, like, you'll be fine. They're a dime a dozen.
Yeah. Yeah, it can feel condescending, but I also always heard it in the, like, cool, caring older brother talking to his little sister kind of way, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very paternalistic.
Which I think Greg has probably said in interviews, but...
Yeah, and I guess, you know, by the time that this came out, and now even more so, I'm, like, familiar enough with Craig to know that he wasn't meaning this in a, like, a tisk tisk, you stay home, you slut, yeah. You know?
Yeah, it wasn't ever, like, judgy or, like, telling you what to do. It was just saying, like, hey, like, hey. I really wish that you would calm down because you're going to get real hurt.
Also, like, guys are terrible. I'm a guy.
Right.
I know what they're like. They're bad. Just, yeah, wait a while.
Wait a while. I feel like you can really hear Steve guitar-wise in that song. And now I'm looking at the writing or the song credits to see who wrote it.
I think Tad did. But they're, I think, like,
yeah.
There's a lot of Steve influence.
There's a lot of Steve on this one.
I take issue. There is one line that I realize I do take issue with, which is, and
a rep is such a tough thing
to reverse. It's like,
nobody cares.
Yeah, no one. So she fucks a lot. So what?
We don't slut shame. Don't need to slut shame.
I think reading these lyrics now, after one spiked seltzer, I've decided I'm mad about Wait a While again. I'm putting the band on notice.
Very upset with you about a few lines in this song that you wrote.
We expect the next album to have a track called Rush Right In.
Yeah. Fuck them if you want to. Parentheses.
Fucks a lot.
I'm sorry, asterisk. We're sorry, Kaylee.
That's all I've ever wanted. Yeah, I just take issue with a lot of the lyrics in this.
It's well-intentioned. It's a well-intentioned song that doesn't always land.
It is. Yeah. As someone who does talk loud and make eyes when trying to flirt, I feel a little attacked, but it is what it is.
Literally, my methods, if you want to call them that, were be in the same room as that person, start drinking a lot, and see what happens. That was it. That was the whole plan. It worked most of the time.
Yeah, I have 4 moves, and 2 of them are being loud. And
those are 2 more moves than I have.
I've been called aggressive.
Yeah, obviously I have too. One of my go-to dating moves was being like, yeah, it's so weird, but my hands are actually really small. No, look, my hands are actually really small.
Or my hands are cold. My hands are cold. I'm cold.
Yeah. Ugh. Desi, do you want to talk about runner's high?
Yeah. So at the time, I was a very active runner. I was doing 5 and 10Ks every weekend. I did a couple half marathons. I knew that Craig was a runner. And when runner's high came out, I was just like, yes, like we need more representation about running as a drug in indie rock music. Like, I think it's just a really fun song.
It is fun. I always thought it was underappreciated.
Yeah.
Especially the, you know, that when it's getting toward the end mm-hmm. of the song.
I like the interview you shared with me, Desi, that he says, a runner's high is one of the safest, cheapest, and most durable highs.
It's true.
I mean, I get high from, like, exercising. I mean, I fucking hate running, but
me too.
Me and my exercise bike, I get a little sweaty. I feel it.
Yeah.
It's real.
Yeah.
Yep.
My suburban power walks.
I love your suburban power walks.
Living for my suburban power walks. It's a fun one. It's a light one. I feel like they should do it live more often.
Yeah. I feel like it would fit in the set list well. Like, yeah. As a, you know, mid-set, just palate cleanser.
There's a larger conversation here about the general avoidance of Teeth Dreams songs on set lists.
Yeah, I agree.
Justice for Teeth Dreams from its own creators. Almost everything is very sad. And I really liked it at the time. I feel like Oaks has eclipsed it a little bit now, mm-hmm. but there is a sadness about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like, I already told you that I can't spend the night like that.
That first verse really kills me. Mm-hmm.
Like, when you've already put an end on the thing before it started, like, that's a bummer. Like, not a good time.
I have some pretty specific interpersonal connections to this song and specifically that first verse. So on that note, let's listen to it.
Waffle House waitress.
Yeah, this song, like, honestly, these interviews that you shared with me, Desi, like, about this record, I feel like I haven't read them in a long time because I was sort of in denial, I think, when I, like, knew shit was bad with them. And, like, I think I was in denial that things were going so south and maybe this might be the last record. So I think I actually avoided a lot of press around this record because I was just like, I don't want to know. Yeah. I just don't want to know. And knowing that they thought that this might be the second to last song on, like, their last album together ever is, like, ouch.
Yeah.
It's just rough.
It's a rough one. I think that Craig weaves really well as a writer the idea of relationships, not just romantic relationships, but a relationship ending. And on first listen, when you listen to that one, you're like, oh, this is about the end of a romantic relationship. But then just hearing it now and that idea, something might happen, but nothing will be never ending. I'm like, that could easily be about a band.
Or like, yeah. Or like just the end of everything or anything.
Yep. I think that is a pretty natural progression into Oaks. This was supposed to be the last Hold Steady song ever.
And I, when like, I still get a little upset.
Me too.
I know. When I heard it, the first time I listened to Teeth Dreams was in that weird German site was doing streaming.
Yeah, me too. Like,
a month before it came out.
Wait, what?
Yeah. So it like, and someone posted about it on the boards. Yeah.
Oh, this was when, this was like right after Sanjay and I first met, and he knew that I loved the Hold Steady and knew that like there was a new record coming out that I was dying to hear. And when the German site uploaded it, he sent it to me and I was just like, okay, so like, do you want to come over and listen to this? And by listen, I mean, listen. but yeah, there was like a weird, like a German radio.
Yeah.
I think.
I assume that wasn't supposed to happen.
No, I think it was. It was.
I think it was. I think it was. It was like an NPR. It was the equivalent of putting it on NPR, but
because it was up for a while on that site.
Huh.
So I remember like listening, sitting on my bedroom floor in my apartment in Binghamton, New York. Shout out to Binghamton, and I heard Oaks, and I was like, "This is the oh no, yeah. This is going to be the last Hold Steady song that we ever hear," and thankfully it wasn't. But it was for a while.
Yeah. Like you said, it's still emotional to hear it now because it brings back so many of those, like, even though, you know, now 10 years on and two more albums and how many more shows, we know that that's not the case, but it's just so, it's so poignant and it feels so final. During the press for this, Ted and Craig did that song by song review and I read that before I heard the record, and Ted says something like, I thought that this was the last song that Craig and I were ever going to do together. And I just thought like, oh no. And then he also talks about how it did just end before that kind of like hopeful fade out at the end, and said that Craig had added that. And I was like, that's such an interesting, it's an interesting touch too, because it shows like the almost hopefulness that something could happen later, even if it's done now and it never comes back, it still feels final, but there's something like, there's something open.
I'm gonna go ahead and say that I'm pretty sure I haven't looked at this head on ever, and it's making me really emotional. Like, I think I was just like, no. You know, like enough shit's going wrong, I can't deal with this.
When you make a band your life, you have to like reckon with that inevitability. Obviously, I know that the Hold Steady is not going to keep making music forever. I feel really blessed that we have 8 albums. And I think that maybe pandemic has showed me that it's more than just the shows and the albums even, but the community that's beneath really the bedrock of the unified scene, and that we have strength in this community. So even if they are not a band anymore, we still have that to hold on to.
I like can't even think about it. Like it's like, I'm just in denial about it.
Let's listen to like the first few minutes of Oaks. It's sonically, it's also a really interesting song. Huge departure for them.
Yep.
The Radiohead influence makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Swept through the sheets, slept in my shoes, hung around with a house of blues. Keep the speed steady, hold the wheel steady. We scratch and we scream, we're scared and we're brave.
A tough one.
One of the like classic Desi scenes of all time. I feel like 2 years after Teeth Dreams came out, maybe. That sounds right. And then I was living in Nashville and Dawes put out a new record and the lead single was May All Your Favorite Bands Stay Together.
Oh, and I
listening to that on repeat, sobbing on the floor of my apartment because I was like, they didn't though. And it was quite a scene.
Noah sent me a mix CD when I first moved to Boston and that was the first song on it. And it was like when we knew that the Hold Steady wasn't going to be together anymore. I was like, but what if they don't? The Hold Steady is for women who have unhealthy emotional attachments to their favorite bands.
Yep.
I get upset about the dismemberment plan like every 6 months. Not a joke.
No, I know. I've been with you in the car while you're listening and being upset about
sorry.
It.
I'm like, guys.
Dream of the limbs of the trees. Dream of the views from the boats. Mountains all covered in oaks. And we hope, as we hang from the limbs of the trees, we cling to the rails of the
if you've been to a Hold Steady show before, you know that Craig likes to say that there's so much joy in what they do up there. And that means all of us there at the show and what we all get out of it. So each week we're going to bring you something that's bringing us joy. So for me, one of the things that's bringing me joy is that I finalized the plans to go upstate and see one of my best friends get married.
Yeah.
Who is it? I have no idea.
It sounds a mystery. Beautiful.
I'm going to take a road trip with two of my favorite people to see some of my other favorite people. And two of them are getting married, which is fantastic. And it's just nice to look forward to that.
What a coincidence, because the thing bringing me so much joy this week is that I am starting to finally finalize our wedding plans after COVID cancellation and a year and a half of uncertainty. We are able to move forward with a smaller version of our wedding. And July is just coming up around the corner. So everything's happening. And I might be finally rounding the wedding plans are causing me stress to wedding plans are bringing me joy.
It's all happening.
It's all happening. I don't have anything about Kaylee's wedding bringing me joy right now because I am waiting for my new dress to arrive. That can be my so much joy.
There you go.
Due to many circumstances, I needed a new dress for Kaylee's wedding and I found my dream dress. So I am excitedly waiting for that to arrive.
That's amazing.
I can't wait. My bridesmaids are going to be beautiful. Well, that's this week's episode. Thank you for listening to What Has Brought Us Joy. We hope that something brought you joy. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for understanding.
We will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.